4. Still May 25th. It is night again, and I am in the cave with one lamp lit. An inexplicable thing. The dog, Pharaoh, has come back. How that is possible, I don't know. Where has he been? How has he lived? Looks terrible, as thin as a skeleton, and half the hair is gone from his left side. I think I already wrote that Pharaoh was David's dog. He came with David when David moved in with us about 5 years ago, after his father died and he became an orphan. His mother died when he was born. Joseph and David were within 6 months of the same age, so they became really close friends. All three of us were, in fact. But Pharaoh was always really David's dog. He would never go with any of us unless David went too. He is, a mongrel, but mostly setter, and he loved to hunt. When we went hunting, when he even saw a gun come out, he would get so excited, you would never believe he would freeze on a point. But he always did. He was really good. So, when David left with my father and mother, and then later the dog disappeared, I assumed he had gone looking for David, through the gap into the deadness. He used to follow the truck sometimes if David went in it. You had to tie him up. But apparently, he did not go through the gap. He must have been living in the woods up near there, waiting for David to come, eating what he could catch. I suppose he heard the two gunshots, and that's what brought him back. I was watching at the time. It was about 1:30, and the man, wearing his blue coverall, he did not put the plastic suit back on, had cleaned the chicken with a knife from his wagon and was cooking it on a spit he had made. The dog came up very cautiously and stood at the edge of the front yard, watching and sniffing. When the man looked up and saw him, he stopped turning the spit and stared, not moving. Then he took a step toward Pharaoh, and Pharaoh backed away. The man crouched down, slapped his knee, whistled, and said something. I could hear the whistle, but not the words. I knew he was calling Pharaoh, though. He wanted to make friends. He walked forward again, and Pharaoh backed away, keeping the same distance between them. The man gave up and went back to the fire. That is, he seemed to have given up, but he really had not. I could tell. He had an idea, a very simple one, and he kept looking up to see if the dog was still there. When the chicken was cooked, just a few minutes later, he went into the house and came out with two plates, mine. He cut off a big chunk of chicken and opened a can from the store box, some kind of meat. He put the chicken and some of the meat on one plate and carried it, moving very gently, over past the edge of the yard to about where the dog had first appeared. And he put it down there. Back to his spit he went, very unconcerned, and carved up his chicken and ate it, along with some kind of dried bread, hardtack, he took from his wagon. I could have given him some fresh baked cornbread. He ate the whole chicken, very quickly, too, and as he ate, he watched the dog from the corner of his eye. Pharaoh crept up on the food, looking at the man, then the plate of food, then the man again, until finally he reached it. Standing as far back as he could, he stretched out his neck, snatched the chicken, and ran back 50 feet. He swallowed it in two gulps, came back for the other meat, and snatched it the same way. Having eaten, the dog came back to the plate, licked it, and then slowly began circling the yard, sniffing as he went, still keeping away from the man. He went all the way around the house twice. Then, to my horror, he started wagging his tail the way he used to when he was tracking, and he turned from the house and headed up the hill toward the cave. He had found my tracks. The man stared after him as he left, whistled loudly, and started to follow, but the dog was quickly out of sight, and the man gave up after a few steps. Fortunately, the area between the house and the cave has a lot of trees and underbrush, so I am quite sure he got no glimpse of the dog once he'd lost him. I crept back into the cave, and in 2 minutes Pharaoh came bounding in. Poor dog, he looked terrible, even worse close up than through the binoculars. He gave two short, creaky little barks and ran to me. But I was scared. Inevitably, if he stayed around, he was going to betray me. So I did not know what to do. I did not dare act too friendly. I said in a whisper, "Good, Pharaoh." But I did not hug him the way I felt like doing. The truth is, though I liked him and he liked me, It was not me he was looking for. He had been in the cave 1,000 times before when we played there, and now he ran around it sniffing everything, looking for David. When he did not find him, he left again in just a few minutes and ran back down the hill toward the house. That means trouble, because that's where the man is, and the plate, and the food. If the man makes friends with Pharaoh, he will come to a whistle, as he did for David. The man can keep him close and follow him when he comes up here. I suppose it seems wrong to be so afraid of that, but I don't know what the man will do. I liked most people. I had a lot of friends at school, but that was a matter of choice. There were some people I didn't like, and many that I didn't even know. This man may be the only man left on the earth. I don't know him. Suppose I don't like him. Or worse, suppose he doesn't like me. For nearly a year, I have been here alone. I have hoped and prayed for someone to come, someone to talk to work with, and plan for the future of the valley. I dreamed that it would be a man, for then, sometime in the future, it is a dream, I know, there might be children in the valley. Yet, now that a man has actually come, I realize that my hopes were too simple. All men are different. The man on the radio station, fighting to survive, saw people that were desperate and selfish. This man is a stranger, and bigger and stronger than I am. If he is kind, then I am all right. But if he is not, what then? He can do whatever he likes, and I will be a slave for the rest of my life. That is why I want to find out, at least as well as I can by watching, what he is like. After the dog left the cave, I went back to the entrance and looked down at the house. The man had scissors in his hand, a small mirror propped in front of him, and was cutting his hair and his beard. He kept at it for a long time and trimmed them both quite short. I must admit it made a great improvement. He looks almost handsome, though he got the hair rather lopsided and back where he could not see it in the mirror. May 26. A sunny day, like yesterday, only warmer. According to my calendar, I have it and the alarm clock here in the cave, it is Sunday. Ordinarily, that would mean I would go to the church in the morning and try to make the rest of the day a day of rest. Sometimes I would go fishing, a practical way of resting. I would take the Bible with me to the church and some flowers for the altar in spring and summer. I did not pretend to have any real service, of course, but I would sit and read something from the Bible. Sometimes I like the Psalms and Ecclesiastes, and sometimes I just opened it at random. In the middle of winter, I usually did not go. There was no heat, and it was too cold to sit there. There never were any real services in the church, not in our time anyway, nor any minister. It is very small and was built a long time ago by some of our ancestors. An early burden, my father used to say, when they first settled in the valley, and I guess thought there would be a village here. There never was, since for years afterward there was no road in, just a trail. The road ended past Ogdentown at the junction. When we went to church, we drove to Ogdentown. This morning, I had to forget all that. The man got up early and cooked his breakfast, still on a fire out in front of the house. He was quick and purposeful. He obviously had plans, and I soon learned what they were. He wanted to explore the length of the valley and take a look beyond. He still did not know how far the green part extended. Before he went, he put some more of the canned meat in Pharaoh's plate and set it out. Pharaoh himself was nowhere to be seen at that moment. But as soon as the man started up the road, he emerged from the woodshed where he had been sleeping, ate the food, and then followed. You could tell he wanted to join the man. He was carrying the small gun, but could not quite get up his nerve. After 100 yards or so, he turned back, sniffed the plate again, and lay down not far from the tent. I followed the man, staying on my high woods path. Sooner or later, he will explore up here, too, and then I will have to cross to the other side of the valley. Also, I will really have to be alert, because in the woods he will not be so visible. But today he stayed on the road. He did not wear the plastic suit and walked much more briskly without it, so I had to work a bit to keep up with him. The path is not as straight as the road. Also, I had to be careful not to make noise. When he got to the store, he went in, and when he came out, I was amazed. I hardly recognized him. The wrinkled coverall was gone. He was dressed in a whole new outfit. Khaki drill slacks, very neat, a blue work shirt, even new work shoes and a straw cap. My clothes. He really looked like a different person, and quite nice. For one thing, with his hair and beard trimmed and now neatly dressed, he looked a lot younger, though still much older than I. I would guess maybe 30 or 32. He walked on down the road, heading south toward the far end of the valley, toward the gap. He looked around him as he went, curious about everything, but he did not slow down much until he reached the culvert. At that point, the small stream, having flowed into the pond and out again and meandered along through the meadow, runs into a rise, the beginning of the end of the valley, I suppose, bears right, and is joined by Burden Creek. He stopped there. I think it dawned on him then, for the first time, that there were two streams, and that the pond was not formed by Burden Creek. And there, if you look closely, the difference between the two becomes plain. I have seen it many times. Even in the last few feet, the small stream has life in it. Minnows, tadpoles, water bugs, skippers, and green moss on the rocks. Burden Creek has none at all. And after they merge, downstream, all the way to the gap and out, the water is clear and dead. I cannot be sure that he noticed all that, but he stared at the water for a long time, getting down on his hands and knees. If he did see the deadness, he must have begun worrying, and maybe it was then that he started feeling sick. In a short time, he was going to be very sick. However, worried or not, he got up in a few minutes and walked on, striding as briskly as before. In another 15 minutes, he was approaching the end of the valley and the beginning of the deadness beyond. The road there leads through the gap and on to the Amish farms beyond. He could not see that, of course. In fact, unless you know, it is hard to believe that there is any way out of the valley at the south end. The gap is in the shape of a very large S, and until you are right on top of it, you think you are coming to a solid wall of rock and trees. Then the road, and the stream beside it, turns sharply right, left, and right again, cutting through the ridge like a tunnel without even going uphill. With Burden Hill on the other end, the result is that the valley is completely closed in. People used to say it even has its own weather. The winds from outside do not blow through it. When he reached the gap, I lost sight of him. There is no way you can see into it from the hillside where I was. But the stretch of road going through it is only a couple of 100 yards long, so I knew he would reappear shortly. When he saw the dead land outside, he would turn and come back. He could not go farther without his plastic suit. I sat down in the sun to wait and looked at the scenery below me. The narrow black road running straight and the river winding beside it. The other side of the valley, here quite close, rising gently in woods. Big oak and beech trees, old ones with black shadows beneath their branches. Higher up, there was a big outcropping of gray rock, a cliff. We used to climb it. It is not as steep as it looks from a distance. It was about 11 o'clock and had turned quite warm. Behind me, some blackberry bushes gave off a sweet smell, and there were bees humming in the blossoms. At times like that, I missed the songbirds. He must have stood a while near the end of the gap, resting or looking, because it was 20 minutes before he came out, walking somewhat more slowly, and started toward the house. About halfway back it happened. He stopped, sat down quickly in the middle of the road, and was very sick to his stomach. He stayed there, retching, leaning to his side on one arm for several minutes. Then he got up and walked on. He did this again 3 times on the way, and after the 3rd time, he was barely stumbling along, dragging the rifle. When he reached the tent, he crawled in. He has not come out again. Pharaoh came out eventually, braver now, and sniffed at the opening of the tent. He even wagged his tail a little, and then went and sat by the empty plate. But the man did not feed Pharaoh. He did not make a fire or eat any supper. But it may be that in the morning he will be better.